Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are men's room straight in the back. The ladies' room is just to the right through that exit. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. At this time, please silence your cell phone. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we recognize that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear direction on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple action. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple action. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So, just a couple of housekeeping things as far as this church goes. Please help us respect the use of the church. There is a plastic coffee can out there for cigarette butts. Please help us keep an eye on the trash and that sort of thing. The policy tonight is if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. If you're not, you're encouraged to. And we're supposed to maintain social distance, the policy of the church, and we're going to try to live up to that. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are starting off the series with Step 1, Part 1. And please help me welcome our panel tonight. We have David H. and Ebony P. I'm not going to kill you with reading, but maybe I will. So, I found the document that's old 1A. I wonder if it's a little rusty. Here we go. It was on page 2.
Oh. Well, it was hard to find.
All right. Step 1 says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We're going to start tonight on good old XXVI, Roman numeral 26. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defective. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may of course mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise. Ebony?
All right. Hey, y'all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hey, Ebony.
I'm super nervous right now. My heart is pounding, just putting that out there. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since Friday the 13th, November 2015. I have a sponsor who knows my sponsor. I have the privilege of sponsoring other people. My home group is Westside Young and Sober. We meet Tuesday nights at 7:30, and I participate in the service structure at the home group and outside of the home group level. Say all of that because I didn't know anything when I walked in AA, and I wanted no parts of anything. No home group, no sponsor, no any of that stuff. And I'm super grateful today to get to do those things. I have to remind myself of that. I get to do those things. So to this paragraph in step one, this is my favorite part. All of them are my favorite part, so I'll probably say that a lot too. But I love this idea that my body is as abnormal as my mind. You know, and I love the last paragraph that was read. You know, as laymen, our soundness may not really hold much weight, but it accounts for a lot of things in my experience. I remember early on walking into Alcoholics Anonymous and not knowing what my problem was, and sitting in meetings and holding the meetings hostage and telling everybody everything about people. And like the worst part was not knowing what was wrong with, you know, not knowing what the problem is. And I love how this book starts and it tells me immediately what my problem is. And it tells me the doctor's opinion, the medical side of it, that my body is different. Why, when I put alcohol in my system and I really plan on just having a few and not getting as blackout or as wasted or doing anything embarrassing, that I do it anyway? Why, when I sit down, I wake up and it's 3 days later and people are asking me what's wrong and I can't explain it? And then I read this part about the allergy and my body being different. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's it. Like, I know that feeling. I know what happens when I put alcohol in my system, and I believe this, you know, because my experience confirms it over and over again. But I love this part, because all of this is me, maladjusted to life, full flight from reality, outright mental defective. So every time I read it in my head, I'm like, check, check, check. Yes, that's all me, but that's not what makes me an alcoholic. You know, what I realize is that my body is different. And there's nothing that I can do to change my body. And so I love this part because I have to find value in the problem so I can get into putting action towards this. And the doctor's opinion really nails it. Like, it hammers home the hopeless. And so I just love this introduction of the doctor's theory, because it's a fact for me. Like, it's no longer a theory. It's been proven in my life time and time again that my body is quite different. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Ebony.
David.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
Grateful to be here tonight. Grateful to see all these smiling faces. Yeah, I just started going to live meetings about 3 weeks ago. And I'm grateful for Zoom. I'm grateful for the way that AA responded in the pandemic. But I'm also grateful to be seeing y'all, being here. It feels good. So I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 14, 2002. A day that started like any other. I'm miserable and lonely, hungover. I'll get to more of that later, but I'm a member of the New Day group over in Virginia Beach. I have a sponsor and a home group and a service position. I'm grateful for all of you guys that have helped me get to today without taking a drink. I avoided AA like the plague for a long time. You know, I had lots of invitations from the judge. I had lots of suggestions from my friends, people that I grew up drinking with, you know. Thought I should go get some help. I was like, you were there. Of course, they moved on and started having lives, and I didn't know how to do that. And I was, of course, too afraid to ask, because then what would they think of me if I admitted I didn't know how to do these? And so, you know, I went to one meeting at 19. It was in a church. It looked a lot like this. And my memory is that they stuck me in a room with all the other new people, and we sat and looked at each other for an hour. Yeah, that's all I remember. I know it's not like that, because I've gone to that meeting a lot of times since that happened. That was in Charlottesville, I'm from. So I said, I'm never going back. You know, they're talking about not drinking. I'm not drinking. So I just signed the sheet for the rest of the times and did that four more times because I got four DUIs and I never went to another. Because y'all were talking about not drinking. I couldn't admit that that was my problem. Let's say that. At some level, I knew that was when those thoughts would come, I would drink them more. But, you know, my life just kept getting worse and worse. And like I said, here my problem, or it says in the next one, my problems piled up. And I went to my second meeting when my best friend from college, who lived across the street, offered to pay my rent, pay my electric bill because the lights were off, and give me a job if I went to one meeting with a mutual friend. And that was the other fellowship, and I went to that, and I said, afterwards, I told that guy, and I used to run hard with it. Yeah, I got a problem with that stuff, but alcohol is not my problem. I think I qualified, but, you know, I didn't go back. Once I got paid, I was Zoom, gone again. 2 weeks ago today, in 19 years, my good friend came in and fired me for stealing from him. And I'd been fired before, you know, but this time was different. My stomach hit lower because I knew there was nowhere I could go and nobody I could con and nowhere left. And on the way out, he turned around with a little twinkle in his eye and said, "Do you want to go to treatment? Because I've been there before." He had offered before. I said, "Nah, y'all get off my back. Leave me alone. I'm not hurting anybody, right?" Truth, that's one of the biggest. I said, I was hurting lots of my family, the people that love me, my friends, the people I worked with, picking up my slack, but I couldn't see that. But anyway, when he offered this time, I just heard yes come out of my mouth. I don't remember, you know, I really didn't want to say it, but I didn't really have any choice. And so that night, I didn't have anywhere to go, and I slept in the woods outside the office. CD hotel I was at had a padlock on my door. The next day, he took me up to Williamsburg, and the first night we read the doctor, and I was in a place where I could hear it, you know. So, hey, that's me, I'm an alcoholic. Who knew? Yeah, everybody but me. So, but, you know, it really was. It was just, it was one of many spiritual experiences I've had. I heard it and I could see that it was me. And now, having said that, the physical part, I didn't have a problem with that because I always drank to get drunk. And, you know, I knew that. I liked it. I liked the effect it produced. And I chased it. But this mental part, you know, I don't like being told I got a problem with with mentally. Yeah, I'd always been told I had a good mind. Now, I never used it very well. But, yeah. But, once I heard the explanation, when I do stop, whether it's because I'm in jail or ran out of money or passed out, lost a girlfriend, lost a place to live, I always, on my own, talk myself in again. And that's what I do. I talk myself into, I can throw out everything else except for how it's going to end. That's probably enough for now.
Thank you. All right. We're going to continue in the doctor's opinion on Roman numeral page 28. We believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
I hate this part, and I love it because it reminds me exactly who and what I am, left to my own devices, without this solution. You know, it's one of those things that I just could never explain away. My family do not suffer from alcohol. My friends, most of them, do not either. And so I remember trying to explain what was going on and not realizing that I'm a completely different entity compared to the way they drink. You know, this phenomenon of craving, I used to hate that, like the allergy of the body, the phenomenon of the craving, all of this stuff. I would hate these words being spouted over and over again at these meetings that I went to, you know, but it explains exactly what happens to me. When I put alcohol in my system, there's this green light. I can't explain why I get this thirsty. Like I'm ready and I just want more. Even when I plan on just two, when I plan on being a lady, this craving takes over and everything else goes, it's thrown out the window. And I don't know what's wrong with me. And right here, it just hammers it home. You know, this is what separates me from other people. I would always be like, I love hearing this allergy and looking it up, an abnormal reaction to something. And I would hear people who are allergic to strawberries don't go and eat strawberries. And I think, like, I'm allergic to seafood and I will try it still. That is who I am. Even with these steps, I will still try. I have shrimp in my freezer right now, y'all. I still go for it to see, like, maybe it'll be different. Maybe it won't be this bad. And that works with seafood. But there's eating these shrimp is not causing me to get evicted. Eating these shrimp is not causing me to lose my job. Eating these shrimp is not having my mother cry in my face begging me to stop. You know, and all of these things, waking up in the morning and just being like, God, why am I awake? I'm so sick of feeling like all of these problems suddenly appear. And I usually wake up a little bit on the sober side back then, not really fully sober, but more sober than when I went to sleep. And just thinking, how am I going to get out of this? What's the point anyway? Now, like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to start. I look around and everything is crumbling and on fire around me. And I know a drink will fix it. what's the point? I know I can't do anything. I know my mom can't do anything. I know the people who love me, the boyfriends, all of those outside things. And I just wake up and what's the point? I might as well die like this. You know, astonishingly difficult to solve. I just gave up trying to solve them. Like that was it. Might as well die now and wake up every morning over and over again, just stuck and not knowing what to do. That is the worst place for someone like me to be, but it's also the best place for someone who suffers from alcoholism like I do, because I just didn't know what to do.
Thanks, Ebony. I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
And I was absolutely sure that all these problems that had piled up could not be solved, could ever, you know, take care of all the broken relationships and all the debt and career problems and no license, you know, none of that legal. And how am I going to go away for 3 months? You know, how are they going to survive without me? Yeah, they got along okay. And but yeah, during that time, you know, well, after about 10 days, I started to realize how miserable and lonely I was, you know, how awful my life was, how miserable I was again. And all I had done before was drink to get rid of those feelings. I really didn't work any. But so after this incident happened in treatment, I decided I was gonna go all in. I might as well give this a shot. And so I decided to get a sponsor, and I stole him like I did everything else. Walking down the hall, this guy's on the phone. I said, "Who are you talking to?" He said, "My sponsor." And I grabbed the phone and said, "Hey, will you be my sponsor?" I didn't know who the guy was, but turns out he was the best guy for me. I mean, you know, he said, "Call me every night." And I said, "Isn't that excessive?" I hadn't had a phone for years. It was always bad news if I have a phone. But, you know, I called him every night because I was scared to ask anybody else. I didn't want to lose him, you know? So fear can sometimes be good. But, you know, I called him every night. He explained this allergy thing to me. I was like, how can I be allergic? I can drink more than anybody I know. he said, "No, that's abnormal. An allergy is an abnormal reaction. You know, most people have one or two and they go, ooh, I'm starting to feel it. I better slow down. You have one or two and you go, wow, I need more." So I had to admit that was true. But you know, after calling him every night for about 2 weeks, something came up and I needed to talk to him, and it was easy to call him because I'd been calling him, you know? So just like all these problems, one day at a time, one bite at a time, you know, going through the steps, some of it fell away, some of it required a little work, some of it required a lot of work and a lot of prayer and a lot of help. But you know, in here, there was a way to do it. I never had a way to do it. I just drifted through life. I didn't know, I had no purpose. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I mean, I was good in school, like I said, but I didn't try. And I ended up in a computer class, and that was had to be God, because I, you know, it was easy and I liked it. And I said, hey, I'll do that, you know. And I'd almost flunked out. My dad had given me the "I'm disappointed" speech, which hurts me a lot more than beating me or yelling at me. So anyway, you know, I didn't believe in God. I would have told you I was an atheist, and that part scared me, but I just started saying prayers, saying the right prayer, and doing all that. And now, even not that long after that, I could see kind of where the fact that I was still here and still alive meant something had been looking out for me. I still can't tell you what, but something is looking out.
Thank you, Dave. Continuing on Roman numeral page 28. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
I love the effects produced by alcohol until I don't. And so I just, every time I read this part, I just think, you know, I expected when I walked into my first meeting to hear people talk about why drinking was bad and why I shouldn't drink, and they were going to be pointing at me and screaming at me about what alcohol does, you know, and that is not what I was greeted. I was greeted by people who drank the way I drank, who understood how I was stealing money from my parents, who understood why I would show up to a school building with children with alcohol in my system, who understood what it felt like to be cursed by God. That was the excuse I used. But they understood all of this pain and all of this suffering and this torture, you know, and it was not the screaming and telling me what was wrong with me. I was welcomed by a fellowship of people who only talked about themselves. And that was the message of depth and weight that I got when I walked to these rooms. And so this fact that I was surrounded by people who understood the effects of alcohol, because talking to my mom, she's one of those, she has one or two, and she's like, oh no, I'm losing control. And that's really annoying for me. That I can't, it's almost frustrating and angering, really. You know, because I drank and I feel in control. I feel present. I feel like I belong. I feel like I can breathe. I love the effect produced by alcohol. And I think it's so normal. And I start depending on it. What's the point of going anywhere sober? And if it works good at the bar, maybe I should drink more before I go to the bar. Like, let's pregame. And then inventing, I thought I was unique. Pre-gaming for the pregame. All of these things. But it's not normal behavior. It's not sane behavior, but I didn't know. You know, I heard a speaker this summer say, you know, when I'm in the jar, I need someone to read the label. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous and this fellowship has done for me. They read the label. And this amazing thing happens when I jump and start taking these simple actions and I start doing something different. You know, these delusions that I've been living in, that normal life that I've been living in, all of a sudden it starts, like, the fog clears and it's, oh my gosh, you mean stealing my dad's lottery tickets for cash is wrong? I thought it wasn't a horrible thing, but in the moment it made sense. I'd rather do something like that than go to my parents and say, like, I can't stop drinking and I don't know what's wrong, please help. No, you steal from them so you can get more alcohol. That's normal and that's logical for me. And I love this restless, irritable, and discontented. I was born that way. I came out of my mother's uterus, restless, irritable, and discontented, period. I have had alcoholic tendencies, stone cold sober, for as long as I can remember. And that's why alcohol is so amazing, or was so amazing for me, you know, and this sense of ease and comfort. It wasn't real peace that I got when I put alcohol in my, you know, I would get this, like, on the way to go get alcohol with stolen money, this inner peace, just knowing I'm about to have alcohol gave me this calm. I knew what it was going to do for me, and I didn't know how I was gonna live without it, you know, and so I love this part, because the end where it tells me I'm gonna do this over and over again, and I did. I stopped and started and stopped and started and lied and cheated and all of that stuff. But until I have an entire psychic change, I wanted like a sort of psychic change from the fellowship. I was hoping that like maybe I'll do 50% of the work and get like 80% of a psychic change. People were telling me I was gonna be a new person, but I thought I was already pretty good, so can you just work on the alcohol? But I need the entire psychic change. And without it, there's little hope of a recovery. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for freedom, not for relief. I found relief in the bottle. But when I get that entire psychic change, I have been granted the gift of freedom. Doesn't mean all the problems disappear or any of that stuff, but I have recovered today because it's, so thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Ed. I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic.
David.
So that cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false, you know, I convinced myself of a lot of really crazy things and had the old ideas that I carried all the way through. You know, I remember first year of college, this guy told me, maybe you drink too much. Like, what a nerd, you know? And you know, we're the cool ones, you know, we can go to school, we can drink, we can have fun. The truth is, I was already drinking alcoholically, and I had been for a while. And but I just didn't tell myself. I never did the introspection as a teenager. A lot of people do the coming of age. I never did that because I was drinking. I was just didn't think about that kind of stuff, you know. I just wanted to have fun. And I had a lot of fun for a long time, but I also let a lot of opportunity cost out there, you know, because I gave up to drink. A lot of friends, a lot of relationships, just a lot of things, you know, and my family. Now, you know, all of that, most of that, I'll say, has been repaired throughout Anonymous, but the self-centeredness, you know, I thought I was a happy-go-lucky guy and loved everybody and they loved me, but it was, in my mind, it was all constantly, what are they thinking of me? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to look? You know, all these questions all the time. And when I got drunk, it quieted that down. I liked that. I felt like a 10-foot tall. So the shame and remorse, you know, that came with all of that. I mean, it was what a burden to bear at the end of my drinking. And the only thing that could give me a temporary sense of ease and comfort to take that. But it didn't work. A firm resolution not to drink again, I wouldn't exactly put it that way, because I'd wake up and say, I'm not going to do it again. And at 3 o'clock, I'm starting to feel pretty good. Yeah, what am I going to do tonight? And I never really tried to stop, you know. I probably started drinking alcoholically in high school, definitely college, and I made it to 42 without dying or how. But, you know, I never tried to stop, you know. I didn't really switch because I drank everything and anything, whatever was there. And you know, and other things. But when I was reading this, I was thinking of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. You know, we understand what that means. I know I do, you know. And, I felt that way almost every day for a long time, but could not see that there, you know, there was hope. I was in that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I knew AA was there, like I said. I've been offered many times. I'd had friends that gotten clean and sober, but not me. I'm not a quitter. I'm like, you know, what are they going to think of me if I do that? You know, I built this reputation being a partier, God. It almost killed me. I never want to live that way again, you know, and I don't have to if I keep doing this. The beauty of it, just one day at a time, you know, a few simple actions, and life's glorious. Thanks.
So here we go on, looks like four, I don't mix it.
XXX.
On the other hand, and strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
I hear hope when I read that. That's what I hear. I hear hope. Ignoring the following rules part, I ignored that piece of it. But I hear that there was a chance for me to get sober. When I was in early sobriety and reading the doctor's opinion, like the whole setup of defining what my problem was, like, set me up for hopelessness. And I love how it, like, the contrast between here I am a few paragraphs before just doing it over and over again, all of these problems, to this very same person after a psychic change can go and be a part of life. I can participate in life again, you know. And I wanted to ignore following these simple rules for a really long time. And I sat in these chairs and going to meetings because I thought that was following the rules. Going to a million meetings and not drinking, making some coffee and not drinking. But what's happening? Where's my psychic change? Why do I still want to die? Why do I want to punch people in the face? Why is there no ease and comfort anymore? You know, and that's when this piece, this requirement, I need to follow some simple rules. And they're really not like super, it's exactly what it says. They're simple. Realizing I have a problem I can't solve. Looking at the things that block me off from the God of my understanding. Inviting God into my life to help me love the people around me. Going and repairing the damage I've caused. Continuing to build a relationship with God as I understand her today. And then doing for others what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Like, wrapped up like that, that doesn't sound like a lot. But when I walked in, it was like, you were asking me for my soul. I don't want to follow those rules. You're doing too much. But like, it's so simple. It's still like, even saying that disgusts me still. Like, oh, it's so simple. The solution is always the same. This is why my sponsor always tells me, did you pray about it? Did you call another alcoholic? What have you found? Did you take inventory? You know, but this psychic change, I don't feel doomed. I wake up in the morning and I'm not like, oh my God, why another day? I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh my God, thank you. Another day. Please help me be useful. It's summer break. What am I to do? How can I love God's kids today? And then I'm like, who am I? You know, I love this part. You know, the desire for alcohol is gone. I'm easily able to control that today. And it's not because of anything I've done. It's because the gift and the grace that has been given to me, because I'm following to the best of my ability today. And when I do that, all of my problems seem to like die of neglect. And they just kind of, everything just kind of falls in line. And just walk this path, Ebony, and those things will take care of themselves. I get the answers. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Ebony. I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic. So I think I've told y'all how smart I think I am. But psychic change, what the heck is that? You know, I had no idea. What are they talking about? It sounded scary to me. I wasn't sure I wanted to do that. And so took it to my sponsor and he pulled out the book and we went to Appendix 2 and read about it. And you know, that it's just a personality change sufficient to overcome the desire to drink. That sounded a little more palatable. And he said, you know, we got directions on how to do that here, you know, by going through the steps. I said, okay, I like that. But then he showed me the other part, that quote by Herbert Spencer of, they keep me in everlasting ignorance and tempt prior to the gaze. So, ooh, there I am again in the book. And, you know, I can still do that. But I've always thought I was open-minded because I thought pot should be legal. Yeah. And it, things that, you know, really they benefited me. That's why I liked them. But I was really very closed-minded because I only wanted things that benefited me. And, you know, but, you know, slowly he was able to pry my mind open a little bit. I could see. I mean, when I went to my first meeting, when I wanted to be there, I could see. These people were just like me. I listened to stories. I said, yeah, he thinks like me. He makes decisions like me. You know, yeah, she does that too. And I said, this is where I belong. I don't know if I can do all this stuff because I was so early, had no confidence in myself in anything successfully in a long time. But you know, I could see that this was the place and these people were happy, joyous, and they went before the meeting, they're laughing. After the meeting, they're going out together, you know, and I was, like I said, many times I was so lonely that was very attractive to me. And as far as controlling my desire to drink, I don't think I still can control my desire to drink, but, you know, I don't have one. I mean, the thought still crosses my mind, don't get me wrong, but I just let it go right on through. And I might say, God, give me another thought or give me an action to do or whatever. I don't play with it. I don't think about it. And I can remember the last time I did. I was 6 months sober and stuck on step 2.5, let's say. And I didn't want to do step 4. And I was thinking about it, and I could taste it. I called my sponsor. I'd gone to 2 meetings. I was at a T intersection. It was a mile to the Oxford House one way and a mile to my Oxford House the other way. I said, God, please get me home. And that was my third step prayer, because I got home, went to bed, I got up, I went to the library, and I started writing. And that was the last serious compulsion I had to do. It works.
I think our last paragraph of the evening is on page 30. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Have you?
That sounds like a painful place to be. Entire, like if I go to a doctor and the doctor tells me, like, the only thing I have to help you is to tell you to stop. I've tried that. What else am I supposed to do? I remember reading this part with my sponsor, my first sponsor, and we go through these different types of men, the man who's unwilling to admit he can drink, like the one who thinks that if he stops for a little bit, he can drink normally and all this stuff. And then she takes a pause, and if you have a sponsor, you might be able to relate. She asked me a question, and I'm thinking in my head, I gotta get it right, I gotta get it right. Like, I want her to get a gold star and tell me good job. She looks at me and she says, like, so which one do you identify with? And I think about it, and I'm like, well, I identify with all of these. You know, I'm all of these. So it sucked because it's like, wow, I suffer from a progressive illness. And so this is me, all the different ways I try to control the way I drink and try to solve my own problem. Then I get to this paragraph and my sponsor's like, it doesn't matter which one you identify with, Ebony, because the problem's still the same. When I put alcohol in my system, the phenomenon of craving takes off and I can't control what's about to happen. I'm just like, well, why'd you ask me that stupid question in the first place, you know? But it's the truth, because I have the same problem and I have the same solution regardless of who I am or what I do. I suffer from alcoholism and I found the same solution, you know? And so I love this, the fact that the doctor is so I'm an AA nerd, if you don't know me. I love thinking about some of this history and just being so grateful that I showed up at a time when the doctor can tell me go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that there's hundreds of meetings, and that there's all these secret little sober drunks in my area, and I like everywhere I go I feel safe because I always almost run into someone, you know. And so I just read this and think, like, what a painful place. That no wonder you guys are debating doctors. If all you can do is tell a drunk don't drink and they keep drinking, I'd be debating too. What other solution can you tell someone like me? I've had millions of people, not, you know, hyperbole. I've had millions of people tell me to stop drinking and tell me, like, you're an alcoholic, you're a drunk, don't do it, stop. I've had doctors tell me, I've had family tell me, I have loved ones, all of that frothy emotional appeal, and nothing worked, you know? But then I show up into the fellowship, and once again, that message of depth and weight, telling me what my problem was by talking about themselves, you know? And I just read this, and it just makes me giggle. Like, the only thing that makes me different is the way my body put alcohol in my system. And I wanted it to be so much more than that. Like, I wanted it to be epilepsy at one point. I wanted it to be, like, my parents, and my dad was military, and, like, all of these things. And I show up in the AA, and it's like, oh, just alcohol. We got 12 steps for that. I'm like, it's got to be more than that. Give me a fantastic story. Nope, I'm just a drunk. You know, I'm just this man who has a problem I can't solve. And I just show up and the fellowship presents a solution. And it's like, still don't want to do that. But there's something about being stone cold and knowing that I suffer from alcoholism that makes maybe doing that work that people are talking about, getting a sponsor, getting into action, getting a service, and reading the book, that starts to become a little bit more like shiny and new when I want to kill myself stone. My head always goes to that, because the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Without a spiritual solution, without a program of action, without the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, without those three legacies of unity, service, and recovery, entire abstinence seems like death, a miserable, horrible place that I would ever want to be stoned. But those three legacies has brought my life, like, to life. I get to participate in life. Thanks for
listening. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. I got a new guy. We're helping each other, and we were talking about this the other night, the doctor's opinion. The different men, like you were talking about, he's just like me. He says, it talks about the guy who's entirely normal in every respect, except the way that alcohol affects him. I said, yeah, we got a lot in common. Yeah. I was that same guy. Not a chance. But, really, I'm all of them through all the different stages. You know, all I know is I belong here, that I'm glad that I found out what was wrong with me. You know, I denied something was wrong with me so long, but in your gut, but I sure didn't believe there was a way out. I sure didn't think entire abstinence was going to work. How am I going to do that? I'm not going to have any fun anymore. I hadn't had fun in years, maybe once or twice a year with some old friends. My life was never more boring than the last 5 years of my drinking. It was miserable. And, wake up, feel terrible, maybe go to work sometimes, if not others. But at some point, have to drink to shut my mind down. I'm not thinking about it. I've done it all. What a vicious cycle. The thing is the people in here were doing it. I could see that. And I'd always heard A Day at a Time. There was a TV show called A Day at a Time. I had no idea how profound that was and how much I live my life today in all areas a day at a time, And I get to start my day over if that day's not going so well, I have to change my attitude, I've learned so many tools, and I'm still learning so many. I got so much, and here it's packaged in a way that I get, and I understand it. It comes from people that I trust that have walked the path that I've walked. This works. This worked for me. This didn't work for me. Whatever, it's just amazing how we get, and how I'm open to it now. Like I said before, one, I wouldn't ask you because I didn't want you to know I didn't know. And two, I wouldn't listen to you because I thought I had a better idea. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. All right. Well, we're out of paragraphs, but we're not.
I think we got one more.
Anybody got a? You got
another one? Isn't there one more there? Page 152? Mm-hmm. Or is that? Maybe I printed out the wrong thing. That's awful far in the book for step one, anyway.
Anybody got a type 5 on powerlessness?
I get it. Move along.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hey, Amy.
What I really hated was what it felt like to be me on the inside. Everything about it was a lie, and I expended so much energy to make sure that you couldn't figure that out. I wanted to be a badass. I wanted to have it all together. I wanted you to think I was a partier, that I was having a great time. But on the inside, I just felt like a lost child. And alcohol fixed all of it. It made me beautiful and smart and funny and all the stuff that I wished that I could be until it stopped working. And by that time, I was caught. I have a body that cannot ever stop me from taking the second drink. We'll move to the mental obsession next week and find out that I also have a mind that will never be able to stop me from the first one. But once it's in my system, it's on. No matter how great my desire or my wish to not do it, to not make my mother cry, to not flunk out of school, to not hurt people, to not hurt myself, to not hate myself, my self-loathing was beating like a drum in my head all the time. And alcohol made it better, but then it started making it worse. And I still couldn't stop. I can't do anything about this on my own. I'm different from other people. Yet what I really want is to be special and exceptional. So there's this conflict in me. I want to be different. I want to be special. Like, I have an ego that tells me I have to be first in line at all times. My ego will always choose me first. And that makes me hate myself even more. And my body will make me keep choosing alcohol over and over again. So I come here and I find out that I have to surrender to win. And surrender is for losers. And I'm not a loser. Although, of course, the drum is going bang, bang, bang. Loser, loser, loser. Fuck up. Loser. And I come here and you tell me that I just have to surrender to the fact that it's never going to be any different. My biggest lies are it's not that bad and I don't need any help. It was that bad and I did need help. And thank God I showed up here so I could get it from you. But I had to stop lying long enough to just admit that I needed you to show me a different way. Because I'm real busy out there being cool and looking like I know the way. I've got this. You know, that should be my middle name. Amy, I've got this. I didn't have crap. And I was exhausted all the time from trying to look like I did have it going on. So I'm tired and I'm angry and I can't stop drinking and my life is one big suck-a-doodle-doo. And I'm still acting like it's cool to be me. Thank God I showed up in a place where you all could look right through me. And instead of me being the 7-foot-tall badass drill sergeant that I believe I am in my head, I want you to think I am, you treated me like the tender-hearted little marshmallow love bug that I actually am. And you made it safe for me to live that out. Gently brought me out into the sunlight of the Spirit where I could be wholly revealed and where it would be safe to do so. And it all started right here. I can't do this alone. I'm so glad.
Thanks, Amy.
All right. Thank you all very much. That's gonna do the wrap. The seven tradition states, here's what we're going to do. We don't know what we're doing. We decided not to pass the basket. So there's a basket over there. I'm going to read this, and you guys do whatever you want with that basket over. Seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Man, we don't read this way anymore. This is all different. This whole script is wrong. Welcome to my head. Sorry. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering pure, welcoming